Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Denver's new ban on flavored tobacco started this week, but gas stations and vape shops, they're not taking their products off the shelves. Our Spencer Soitcher shows us why it's possible they may never get fined, even if they keep selling flavored tobacco.
Denver's war on Zyns and other flavored tobacco products is looking less like a war and more like a suggestion.
We've not taken anything off the shelf.
The city's new law against selling flavored tobacco went into effect on Tuesday. But walk in a gas station or vape shop, like Mixed Up on Colfax, and you'd have no idea.
Yes. Everybody's keeping them on the shelves.
So we expect retailers to follow the law as such.
Brendan Gentry is Denver's tobacco program supervisor. The city council and the mayor passed the ban in December, and then Gentry and his team needed time to figure out how they'll enforce it.
So we're in the educational phase right now, so we're developing our resources.
The city won't start what they're calling soft enforcement until July. That's a written warning. No fine. We're not mad at you yet. We're just disappointed, philosophy. Then on January 1, 2026, they'll start handing out fines. Or will they?
If, you know, laws change, we will adapt accordingly.
Gas station and vape shop owners like Phil Guerin are petitioning to let Denver voters weigh in on the ban in the November election. The clerk and recorder's office says it's still verifying if they got enough valid signatures to make the ballot. But if voters overturn the ban in November, there's a real chance the war on Zyns and flavored tobacco ends before it ever really started.
There is, especially when we win the election.
The enforcement of this will be part of the inspections the city does about twice a year. You may remember this isn't the first time the city council has passed a flavored tobacco ban in Denver. There was one that passed in 2021, but then Mayor Michael Hancock vetoed that. We'll wait to see if Denver voters get to decide this one. The clerk, though, says they've already turned in over 17,000 signatures. Now the question is, how many of those are valid?
Yeah, so I'm watching this thinking they're kind of relying on the goodwill of these shops to, like, go ahead and take it off the shelves.
Right.
Even before we're telling you we're going to come in and check you.
Right.
And there's no goodwill.
No, they're mad at them for passing this to begin with. You think we're really going to take it off the shelves to help you? Is certainly probably what
they're going
to
wait until someone marches in there and says, excuse me.
Yeah, wow. Probably not going to happen.
Spencer, thank you. National Democrats are bringing the Trump opposition tour through Colorado this week. Bernie Sanders and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, two stars of the progressive left, have drawn crowds of thousands today, speaking out against President Donald Trump's administration. They also targeted Colorado's most vulnerable Republican. AOC is speaking to a crowd right now at Denver Civic Center Park. Actually, she just wrapped up. Bernie Sanders coming on stage. Organizers said they were expecting a crowd of up to 25,000. This is the latest stop on their Fighting Oligarchy tour, one of several planned stops that the pair is making all across the West. This Denver rally is their second stop of the day today. Earlier, more than 10,000 people showed up to UNC in Greeley. That's where Sanders took the stage to paint Democrats as champions of working class issues like health care and education costs. Meanwhile, he criticized the Trump administration's alliance with billionaire Elon Musk and their sweeping attempts to dismantle public agencies and slash government spendings, programs like Medicaid and Social Security.
The worst and most dangerous addiction we have is the greed of the oligarchs. They are prepared to destroy Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, the Veterans Administration, in order to make themselves even richer.
This tour is designed to hit swing districts held by Republicans, including Colorado's 8th District, which includes Greeley, hence the stop there earlier today. Newly elected Representative Gabe Evans, widely seen as one of the most vulnerable seats in Congress. Today, AOC encouraged Democrats to mobilize against him and criticized him for not holding in-person town halls in his district since he was elected last November.
You know which Coloradans did vote to gut Medicaid and jack up health care costs? Gabe Evans and Lauren Boebert right next door. Since Gabe hasn't been around here, if we could just say hi to him for a moment, can we just say... See you in November!
Both Evans and Lauren Boebert have both faced mounting criticism for not holding virtual or in-person town halls after a string of heated town halls in Republican districts across the country. This week, a spokesperson for Evans' office told the Denver Post he will do town halls, but in a way that avoids, quote, being drowned out by yelling activists. And some Colorado Democrats have also faced feisty crowds at their own town halls, like Senator Michael Bennett. Several protesters were escorted out of his town hall in Golden this week. They were criticizing him for not taking a strong enough stance against the Trump administration. A man who escaped the ICE detention facility in Aurora during a powder outage this week is now back in custody. An ICE spokesperson says the Adams County Sheriff's Office helped them find and arrest 32-year-old Yoel Gonzalez this morning. Gonzalez was one of two men who escaped the privately run ICE detention facility in Aurora on Tuesday night. The other man has not been found. At a hearing today, a public defender claimed that Gonzalez called authorities to turn himself in and wanted to give up information on the other escapee, hoping that it would get him out of trouble. ICE officials originally put the blame on Aurora police, saying they refused to help find those two escapees, but that did not sit well with Aurora police. Yesterday, Police Chief Todd Chamberlain said APD wasn't notified of that escape until about 5 hours after it happened. Meanwhile, one of the highest profile detainees at the facility is now fighting her deportation after she was arrested earlier this week. Today, a federal judge ordered the Trump administration cannot deport activist Jeanette Vizguerra without first facing a judge. ICE agents detained Vizguerra in the parking lot of her job on Monday, saying she faced a removal order and they planned to deport her. Vizguerra, she's been fighting deportation since 2009. She has won multiple stays on deportation orders. She famously sought refuge in a Denver church to avoid arrest during the first Trump administration. And at the time of her arrest this week, she was appealing a rejection of her most recent visa application. Vizguerra's attorneys argue that it's unfair to detain her while her case is under consideration and that the removal order against her is not valid. In an order today, a Colorado judge agreed the removal order was, quote, procedurally flawed, and they temporarily blocked Vizguerra's deportation until her case can be heard. This is such an interesting story to me. There's an appeals court decision now that could unlock thousands of acres of Colorado's public lands that are currently inaccessible to hunters and other people who are out there just recreating on the land. But it's a loss now for ranchers and landowners who want to prosecute what they call corner crossers for stepping over private land. So the legal question of corner crossing has made it risky to access some public land across the West, especially in rural areas where land is parceled out in a grid system. When plots of public land fall diagonally on the grid, sometimes hunters will step across a corner of private land to get from one public plot to another. Well, that doesn't sit well with some of these private landowners, people who see this as trespassing. Even if the hunters don't step on their land, they just step over, they still see it as trespassing. Earlier this week, a federal appeals court sided with the hunters. This was a Wyoming case, who were facing trespassing charges for stepping across the corner of some ranch land there. It may not seem like a big deal, but a recent report guesses that corner crossing disputes restrict access to more than 15 million acres of public land in western states, including 700,000 acres in Colorado. All right, let's bring in Corey Reppenhagen now because you got a little fire, a little ice this weekend, kind of a tale of two seasons with our forecast.
It really is, and that is typical March stuff with a very mild storm system that will roll through the state tomorrow. Down here in the Front Range, warmer conditions, dry air, elevated fire conditions, and in the mountains we'll have a little bit of snow. Here's the forecast high temperatures. Those will be a little bit warmer as well tomorrow. That's going to add to the fire risk here. We have fire weather warnings here across the Front Range and Northeast Plains, also down here to the south. The combination of those gusty winds, which could get into the 40 to 50 mile per hour range, along with some really low relative humidity and some dry vegetation out there, just leading to this typical March scenario. Here's the wind forecast. We'll see them kick up here in the foothills overnight, and then on to the Front Range here as we go through the afternoon hours tomorrow. Pretty frequent wind gusts here, and sometimes they could be in the 40 mile per hour range, maybe even 50. And then tomorrow night, we could even kick it up one more notch here. As far as this storm system in the high country, that's going to add to a little bit of snow here, a mild event here, 1 to 4, 1 to 5 inches in some of the mountain towns, and up to 10 to 12 inches on some of the mountain passes. And when you look at the 7-day forecast here, we start to warm things up here on Monday, and we could be looking at record high temperatures, Jenny, by Thursday.
Hey, bring it on, as long as there's not a fire risk, right? We want to say a quick thank you for all that you have done this week to help fill an emergency funding gap for a nonprofit dedicated to the health and safety of Colorado's outdoor spaces. Here's Kyle with an update on this week's word of thanks.
Each year, teams of young people and veterans go out to Colorado's public lands and they do wildfire mitigation, trail maintenance, park improvements. The longtime nonprofit that runs those crews is suddenly faced with a $46,000 budget gap due to the current uncertainty around federal funding. They reached out to me. I'm bringing it to you. This week's Word of Thanks microgiving campaign supports the Southwest Conservation Corps. Right now, they're planning out which of their 2025 projects can happen and which will have to go on hold. Southwest Conservation Corps, program of the nonprofit Conservation Legacy out of Durango, works across southern and central Colorado. Their teams of veterans and young people go out to clear dead and dying trees so that trails remain safe and open to the public. They remove invasive species so native plants can thrive. And they do wildfire mitigation in areas where the wilderness meets urban communities to keep people safe from fires. They're planning work at the Great Sand Dunes National Park and in Colorado's National Forests, including the Pike, San Isabel, and San Juan National Forests. They've got work they want to do in Chaffee County, Alamosa County. The list goes on and on. And they want to be able to do as much as possible. Scan the QR code on your screen or text the word thanks to 303-871-1491 to get that link to join me and a bunch of others in helping to make up that budget gap. Between your one-time donations this week and the people who make monthly recurring gifts to the Word of Thanks Fund, we are really close to covering that gap. More than 4,500 of you have signed up to simplify your giving by setting up a monthly contribution, and it means we've started your recent microgiving campaigns with more than $30,000 in donations each week. You can use that same QR code or text to get there.
So this is the hokey pokey of book bans. A Colorado district took books out of the library. Now a judge says, put them back in. Staff shortages deflate, an essential forecasting tool at the National Weather Service's Grand Junction office. And it is Friday, and we are cooking up some good news. That's next. A federal judge is now ordering a school district in Elbert County to put more than a dozen books back on their library shelves and is also warning conservative school leaders against removing more books that they disagree with. Last August, the Elizabeth School Board announced it would pull 19 books from school library shelves. They included books mentioning the LGBTQ community, religious views, drug use, profanity, or sexual content. Well, then a high schooler sued with the help of the ACLU, NAACP, and an Authors Guild, arguing that the book removals were unconstitutional censorship. This week, a judge ordered the district to return those books to libraries by next week while the case continues in court. The district has argued that the removals aren't a ban, and they came after a thorough review by school staff and district parents. The district says they plan to appeal. The National Weather Service is now scaling back some essential forecasting tools due to staffing shortages. The agency is one of several services forced to fire hundreds of workers last month, and now they're reducing how frequently they launch their weather balloons in some locations, Grand Junction being one of them. Our Chris Bianchi explains why that is a big deal.
Well, this week it was announced that less weather balloons will be launched because of budget cuts from the federal level and the ongoing DOGE project. So what exactly are weather balloons and why could this make weather forecasting considerably worse in the coming months and years? Weather balloons measure important weather data. So weather balloons are launched twice per day from each of the National Weather Service's 120 plus offices around the country. And of course, I'm a meteorologist, I'm here on Earth, and most things, because of good old gravity, are here on Earth. The one way we can get weather data from what's going on above us, which is really important, the jet stream's way above us, it's through these weather balloons. And so we find out, and I take a look, all meteorologists take a look at that data that comes in from those weather balloons. They're usually launched twice per day, and that data gets fed straight into computer forecast models. And also, it's not just the models that are getting that data, that gets fed into your on-made weather apps. If you're wondering, well, who cares about what you say on TV or whatever you're hearing? I'm going to get my weather from my weather app. Well, guess where that data from the weather app comes from? also those balloons. And same, by the way, when it comes to AI forecasting, things like that, all that data goes there as well. Model data will get worse. So think about it this way. Imagine, hypothetically, if the Broncos were to cut, say, 10 to 15% of their scouting department, you might expect that their drafts might get worse in the coming years. Same idea here with the lack of weather balloons and, in turn, the lack of weather data.
Something this simple can create so much love and friendship and sharing.
There is no recipe for good news, but tonight's ingredients are sure to bring you a smile. This is our 435th time celebrating your good news. Today, we got the chance to add some special ingredients to our favorite segment with the help of the good folks at the Courtyards at Mountain View.
Wow. This project is huge just because it has sentimental value for everybody. At the Courtyards Cookbook. It's a book of all of our recipes from our residents. Lemon milk sherbet. We have, strawberry jello cake. It's lentil soup with kielbasa. They don't cook in their apartments, but we have a wonderful chef here. So we're gonna take some of these wonderful recipes and give them to our chef.
Well, suddenly it's popped up to be this book. I'm excited to share it with my grandchildren.
So my good news is the reports I get every day about my little great-grandchildren.
I just celebrated my 31st anniversary.
Spring is in the air, and we cannot wait to get started on our garden project.
I have another daughter in Texas, but the one that lives here said, "Mom, you need hearing aids." And she kept telling me over and over, but the last 2 days have convinced me that she's right. And my good news is I'm gonna get them.
No, it's great news. Something this simple can create so much love and friendship and sharing.
Oh, I want a copy of that cookbook. We're back with your feedback, thanks to Marilyn. Next. Tonight, Carol writes, "I find myself filled with anxiety and feeling helpless in the current political environment and decided the only way I can be a positive influence is to sign up for the recurring donation for Word of Thanks." Carol, thank you. You are making a difference. You are not helpless, and I hope others are inspired to help just like you. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.